And I greet all you in the name of our Savior Jesus Christ. So I have to tell you that it was supposed to be a study tonight, and I don't have a study for you, so my apologies if you're expecting one. But yesterday when we were fasting and praying, you know, I couldn't shake this idea about my title, my sermon here is Temples, you know, the place where God dwells. So I was thinking about that all day, and I couldn't really get that off my mind. So I'll give you my sermon on temples. And so it's not really a Christmas sermon either, but after my dad preached this morning, I think it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit with what he was talking about. So temples, you know. So the very first idea that scholars kind of think about, the first temple, if you will, was actually Garden of Eden. That's what a lot of people have a theory about, that, you know, God and man were dwelling together in one place. And that is kind of the first idea of the temple. And some of the Israelite temple ideas were kind of taken, or kind of parallel some of the things that were in the garden, you know, how they went out and how they went in, and there was one entrance, and the entrance had to face a certain direction, the temple had to face a certain direction. So when Adam and Eve were cast out, they went out this exit, which was guarded, and they couldn't go back in. You know, that separation after they sinned. And so as time went on, there must have been something, I don't know exactly what, but, you know, when Cain and Abel were sacrificing, their sacrifices were, you know, one of them was sacrificing okay, the other one wasn't. So they must have been given some kind of direction on how to sacrifice. And then Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek, and he was a priest of some kind, or a high priest of some kind, and don't know exactly where it was that he was doing his things at. But God had given them something. And so it really isn't until the Exodus when we start getting the first description, really, the tabernacle of Moses. So if you look in Exodus in chapters 35 to 40, it describes the tabernacle, what it was made of and what was to take place inside. Now they estimate, looking at the things that were brought, the value of this temple, modern day, or the tabernacle, was about $20 million. You know, so it was worth quite a bit of money. And when they were asked to bring, you know, the Moses put the petition out there, and God told them that, you know, the children of Israel are going to bring the parts that they need. So he asked for a lot of expensive things. He asked for gold, and he asked for the incense, and he asked for the special kind of wood, and he asked for the cloth, and a specific kind of cloth, and purple and blue and gold that had to be made in the cloth. And the entrance was made out of this purple and this blue, you know, and that was a rare type of dye back in ancient times. You couldn't, it came from very specific places. And so first time they constructed it, it took them 9 months to actually build all the parts. And so while they were wandering in the wilderness for 40 years and 40 nights, they had to tear this thing down, and they had to build it again. And they had to, and they used it for quite a long time, 440 years, if my math is correct. But they had to take the tabernacle, and they take the Ark of the Covenant, and they can perform their sacrifices inside the tabernacle. And it was a certain size, and there was one entrance in, and the priests had to prepare themselves to go in. And so it was here's an artist's rendition of what it may have looked like. And so the posts had, I think it was animal skins or something on there, or some kind of fabric. And so it was just a fabric wall. And on the inside there had the, I don't know if you can see that or not, but there's the candles. And there's the table where the showbread was. And then there's an altar of incense there. And you can see that blue veil there. And there were certain things that were on it. There were cherubim were inscribed, or not inscribed, but woven into the veil, and there were certain shapes, I think pomegranates and something else were on there. And then it was covered in all these, you know, these skins and all these fabrics, right? And everything was overlaid in gold. So, and on the outside there, you can see there's an altar where they would make sacrifice. And there's that priest there after he's making the sacrifice. He's washing his hands. He's cleansing himself, you know, getting ready to go into the tabernacle here. So it took a lot of work. It was worth a lot of money. And so they did this for 440 years, and they brought this around. They had to take care of it, they had to haul it around. It took several thousand people to dismantle and carry this thing. You know, it was a burden. But they had to do that for 440 years until finally Temple of Solomon. All right, so Solomon was David's son. He built the temple. You find that in 1 Kings and in 1 Chronicles. Describes the temple that Solomon built. It's basically the double the size of the tabernacle of Moses, right? And they estimate that value at $4 billion, right? Not including labor. And so it took them, I think, much longer to build. It took them 7 years to build this temple because it was much more ornate. Of course, it was stable in one place there in Jerusalem. And so it was worth a lot of money. And they used that for almost 400 years until Babylon came in and destroyed the temple there and took all the gold and took all the valuables that were inside of it, right? So there's an artist's rendition of what it may have been. You can see there's a couple added things out here. They still have the altar outside, which where they were burning sacrifices, but then they had all these containers that contained water, you know, because when the amount of sacrifice that they were doing, I imagine it was very, very messy. Not many of you have ever butchered an animal in here, but it is not a cleanly thing. It's quite messy. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of blood, and a lot of entrails, and a lot of things that come out. So these things, they had to have a massive amount of water in order to keep these things clean, and the priests had to be clean. And so they would enter in. There's that, again, the outer, and then the inside past the veil was where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. So those priests, again, they had to prepare themselves and to make themselves worthy to enter in. Again, this is just and it took a lot. There was a lot of different sacrifices that took place here, different kinds. And then there was the second temple, and the book of Ezra gives a little bit of details about the second temple. So this is after they were allowed to come back, and so after they were allowed to come back, they built it again. We don't have nearly a description like we do on Herod's temple or on. On Solomon's temple. But it went through a couple different renovations, we know that. Herod was the one that did the last renovation, I think, if I read that correctly. And that would have been the temple that Christ was standing on, or near. And then later on, after Christ's death, that was destroyed in 70 AD by the Roman army. So, we have these temples that were built. You know, there's an artist's rendition of what the second temple may have looked like. We don't have a huge description, but again, there's these outer areas, these inner areas, and places where the priests would live. Water would have to come in so they could bathe. All these things that they had to do, take care of it. So there's a lot of effort that went into this. So surely that one's worth a lot of money as well. And there was this whole organization. The whole tribe of Israel was dedicated to performing all the ordinances that took place inside the temple. And so, what was the purpose of the temple? Well, it was a sanctuary. It was a safe place. It was protected from the outside, right? So, the only one who could go in there was the high priest and the past the veil, where the Ark of the Covenant was. No one else was allowed there, and the high priest was only allowed there, I believe, once a year to make a certain sacrifice. And other than that, the other sacrifices all took place outside, but this was a special place. It held a special meaning because he had to go in. He did the sin offering for all of Israel, and he did that once a year. It was of great value. It was worked for, cared for daily, not only by the priests, but the people had to come, and they had to give their offerings. And so there were, I think, five different kinds of offerings. And so there was there were some offerings that they came, they gave bread or grain. And so they had to share that with the priests. So that's how the priests gained their sustenance. And there were sacrifices of animals. And same thing, those priests would get a certain portion of that. And that was how they would get their meat. And the people had to come and give these things, you know, and they had to do it all the time because these priests, of course, this whole institution, this whole tribe of Levi had to take care of this. And so they needed these things just about every day. They had to come and do these things. And so it took a lot of work. And luck took a lot of care. And it was this reminder, this great divide. created by our sin, right? Adam and Eve came in and they sinned and they were separated out. And so now, in order to get back in God's presence, you had to go through these steps. You had to take and you cleanse, the priests had to cleanse themselves. They had to make sure that they were prepared to go in, because if they weren't, there were consequences. They had to treat it carefully. They had to treat all the parts of it very carefully. There was one time, for some reason, they were moving the Ark of the Covenant, and they put this Ark of the Covenant on the back of an ox cart, and they were moving it down the road in an ox cart, which, if you looked back in the law, was not supposed to be done that way. It was supposed to be carried by the priests. They were not supposed to put it on a cart of an ox. Well, as the cart was going down the road, it began to shake, and the Ark of the Covenant began to tip over, and one of the priests reached up, pushed back up, and God took his life from him. Why? Because he wasn't doing what was asked of him. He wasn't doing it the way God told them to do. You were supposed to carry this. The priests were to carry this. It was not to be burdened by animals. It was to be carried by those that were worthy. So you had to treat it. You had to act a certain way to be in here. There were consequences. Those priests had to act a certain way. There was the sons of Aaron who came in and they burned this strange fire. I'm not exactly sure what that strange fire was, but they brought in something that wasn't supposed to be there. And God struck them down. You know, they had to come in the right mindset, because they were going on behalf of all Israel. They were going in to cover the sin of all Israel. And so you had to be perfect. You had to be unblemished from the world. You had to wash. You had to prepare their minds and their hearts and their spirit to come in. Because you were taking care, going in on behalf of all of Israel. And if you didn't do that, then you were, you suffered a consequence. I think it was King Uzziah. He went in, he was proud, and he wanted to go in. He wanted to reach in, and he wanted to touch the Ark of the Covenant. So the priest told him, no, you can't do that. But he said, I'm the king, I get to do it anyway. And he walked in, and he touched it, and he was struck with leprosy for the rest of his life, because he wasn't the one. He couldn't go in. He was not the one chosen. He wasn't the one who was prepared. And so because of that, he had to deal with a consequence the remainder of his life. You know, it meant that obedience meant that they would receive blessings and they would receive forgiveness. And that was the purpose of this temple. These priests had to go in on the behalf. They had to go in specially prepared on behalf of the people. And so why don't we have a temple today? Well, the temple was this physical location, had restricted access. Only the high priest could enter. In the Holy of Holies, in the inner sanctum there, only he was allowed to pass through the veil. There was one person that was allowed. Only him. The high priest was a type of Christ, and he was the only one who was worthy to approach God. And then if you look in Matthew 27:51, this is Christ is on the cross, and he says, you know, he gives up the ghost, and this is what happens. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from top to the bottom. And the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. So that's the very first thing that happened after he gave up the ghost. This veil, which separated man and God, was rent. It's kind of an interesting thing, right? What does that mean? So there was this change that took place, this type, a new type, right? 3 Nephi, the 7th chapter in the 4th verse. Christ has come to this land and he is speaking. And he said unto them, marvel not that I said unto you that old things have passed away and that all things have become new. Behold, I say unto you, the law is fulfilled that was given unto Moses. Behold, I am he that gave the law. I am he which covenanted with my people Israel. Therefore the law in me is fulfilled, for I have come to fulfill the law, therefore it hath an end. Behold, I do not destroy the prophets, for as many as have not been fulfilled in me. Verily, I say unto you, shall all be fulfilled. Because I say unto you that old things have passed away, I do not destroy that which has been spoken concerning the things which are to come. For behold, the covenant which I made with my people is not all fulfilled, but the law which was given unto Moses hath an end in me. Behold, I am the law and the light. Look unto me and endure unto the end, and ye shall have life. For unto him that endureth to the end will I give eternal life. Behold, I have given unto you the commandments, therefore keep my commandments. And this is the law and the prophets, for they truly testified of me. So Christ is telling them, this is done. We no longer have this separation. We no longer need a temple. I tore that down. There's no longer a group of people that go before on your behalf and make atonement. It's done away. He says, you're going to come to me. You can come to me directly. There is no need for this physical building. There's no need for these physical sacrifices. You come to me. And so this event, it truly meant something. He was tearing down this separation. These men who went in and performed sacrifices, who prepared themselves, he took that responsibility away from them. And he gave it to all of us. We now have this freedom to approach Christ. We're free. We're not bound by these rules of the Mosaic law. But freedom requires responsibility. And so it is no longer the responsibility of these priests to go in and cleanse themselves and purify themselves. It's now our responsibility, because we have direct access to Christ and we can go before him and make our requests known to him. Very personal. It's something you and I can do, and there is no restriction on it. Again, it's this freedom. So when this veil was torn down, Christ was telling us, you are free to worship me. You don't have to depend on anyone else. But at the same time, it's now your responsibility. You must prepare yourself. You must cleanse yourself. I've taken away this block, and I've given you access to me. And so, we have a new temple. 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter and the 16th verse. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. So what Paul is telling him is like, look, you're responsible. God dwells in you. He no longer dwells in the mercy seat. He's within you. You are the temple. So do not defile your body. Do not defile your spirit, because God dwells in you now. If you come and you promise and you are baptized, you are now the temple of God, because you carry his spirit within you. In 1 Peter, the 2nd chapter, in the 5th verse, ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Once again, it's no longer the priesthood that go before you and make sacrifice. It's you who must make sacrifice. It is you who must cleanse yourself. It's you. It is your responsibility, because we now have this freedom to approach Christ. We're to build up and be spiritual, lively stones, a temple where sacrifices are made, which honor our God, because we can now access Christ. We are the temple. Ephesians 2, 18. For through him we both have access by one Spirit unto the Father. Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, the fellow citizens with the saints, and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto a holy temple in the Lord. Again, we look back and we can see our forefathers and the prophets, and we look to Christ and we build a temple based on Him. A temple where we go. A temple where God is welcome. A place, a sanctuary. We need to be the sanctuary. We need to be that protected place. It's guarded by us. We need to guard our hearts and keep out that which is evil. Because just like the sons of Aaron, you know, who were destroyed, we too can be destroyed. If we bring in things that don't belong into our heart, if we don't guard our sanctuary, if we don't keep our temples clean, keep the foul things out. Sanctuary is a place of value and is worthy of our efforts. You know, those sanctuaries, those early temples were in the, you know, millions and billions of dollars, which they cost, you know, ornate. It was description. It's what God values. He values you. He values me. To Him, you are priceless. John 3:16, for God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son. Whoso believeth on Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's how much value you have. Your temple, your person, your spirit is so valuable to God. He was willing to send His Son to make sacrifice, so that we could live forever. So you have value. Just like those temples of old were adorned in gold and blue and purple, having candlesticks of gold, having an altar which is laden in gold. That's what God looks at you. You are His precious temple. Mormon, 4th chapter, 95th verse. See that ye are not baptized unworthily. See that ye partake not of the sacrament of Christ unworthily, but see that ye do all things in worthiness. And do it in the name of Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. And if ye do this and endure to the end, ye will be in no wise cast out. You know, it takes work, just like those temples of old took daily sacrifice and daily effort and daily cleansing. So do we. We have to do all things worthy of Christ. In the name of Christ, we need to carry ourselves as we go about and be a worthy temple, a place safe from the world, a place that God can reside. Because it comes with promise that He's not going to cast us out because we're valuable, but we have to do that which is worthy in His sight. We can't blaspheme His name. We can't take on the name of Christ and come here on Sunday and then leave out the doors and forget all about Him. It's not a Sunday kind of thing. It's an everyday kind of thing. Takes daily effort in order to be worthy. And we need the sacrifice. In order to cross that divide, that gap. Romans 12:1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove that what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Sacrifice. It means not becoming one with the world. It means not becoming one with the things that Satan has presented, the easy anger, lust. Those are the things that will drive us out. Those are the things we need to sacrifice daily. It's not a one-time event. It takes effort every day. Third Nephi, fourth chapter, 49th verse. You shall offer up no more unto me the shedding of blood. Yea, your sacrifices and your burnt offerings shall be done away, for I will accept none of your sacrifices and your burnt offerings. You shall offer for a sacrifice unto me a broken heart and a contrite spirit. What Christ is asking is like, you need to put away your desires. Put away. I have a better way. I have given you example. I've given you the steps on how to live. I've given you the steps on how to get to me. Got to put off anything that's going to keep you from getting there. Because I can cover you. All I need is your effort. I need your daily effort. I need you humble before me. Because those sacrifices, you no longer have to go to someone else. It's on you to sacrifice. It's on you to cleanse your heart. It's on you to cleanse your mind. It's on you to get your temple in order. We must act appropriately. Helaman, in the second chapter, the 58th verse. And because of their iniquity, the church had begun to dwindle. And they began to disbelieve in the spirit of prophecy and in the spirit of revelation. And the judgments of God did stare them in the face. And they saw that they had become weak, like unto their brethren Lamanites. The spirit of the Lord did no more preserve them. Yea, it had withdrawn from them, because the spirit of the Lord doth not dwell in unholy temples. We have to act according. We cannot put up a temple and call it God's if we're going to partake in what the world has to offer. If we're going to let those things come in, unbelief and doubt and fear and anger, those are the things which are going to take us away. And God will withdraw. He won't be with us if we don't keep our temple clean. And we'll suffer. We'll suffer a life long. We can suffer for eternity. So clean your temple. Make a daily effort. Walk daily. Christ has given us his example to follow. And there's times when we will make mistakes. But you know, we can ask for forgiveness. And humble yourself. And resist Satan. There is promise in obedience. 1 Nephi in the 7th chapter, 41st verse. For behold, the righteous shall not perish. For the time shall surely come that all they which fight against Zion shall be cut off. And the Lord will surely prepare a way for his people unto the fulfilling of the words of Moses, which he spake, saying, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you, like unto me. Him shall ye hear in all the things whatsoever he shall say unto you. And it shall come to pass that all they which will not hear that prophet shall be cut off from among the people. Now I, Nephi, declare unto you that this prophet of whom Moses spake was the Holy One of Israel. Wherefore he shall execute judgment and righteousness, and the righteous need not fear, for it is they which shall not be confounded. You know, Christ executes his judgment, and he can accept us. He's willing to take on our sin. All that blood and gore from those sacrifices, it was to resemble what sin looked like. It was ugly. It was messy. It was smelly. Burning all this flesh on an altar. Christ came and he took the place of that. He says, you can cast your sin onto me. If we walk in his precepts, and we walk where he wants us to, and listen to him, hear his word, and humble ourselves, then we have no reason to fear. We're not going to be confused. Our eternal salvation will be secure. Hebrews in the 10th chapter. This is the covenant that I will make with them after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws in their hearts, and in their minds will I write them, and their sins and iniquities will I remember no more. Now where remission of these is, there is no more offering for sin. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus. So we no longer have this building. We no longer have this body that goes on our behalf. It's done away. All we have to do is offer remission of our sins, beg for his mercy and his forgiveness, and sacrifice our lusts of the flesh, sacrifice the desires of man. And we can boldly go before Christ. And we are worthy of his blood if we will but humble yourself before him. By a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us, through the veil, that is to say, his flesh. And having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast to the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. You know, God, he's given us the way. He's made the path before it easy. His burden is light, but it's your responsibility. It's incumbent on you to perform sacrifice, to cleanse yourself, to walk in his precepts. And it's available to all. There is nothing or no one that he is not willing to accept if they humble themselves, if they break their hearts, they put their livelihoods, their futures in his hands. He's willing to cover you. He's willing to take on the ugliness of sin and wash you. You are God's temple. It's within you. So take care of your temple. Take care. Wash yourself daily. Sacrifice daily. Think on him daily. Because if God is, he will dwell within you. If you work at it, he will talk to you. He will give you promise if you move towards him. If you stumble and get back up, he will dwell within you, and you will be the temple of God. Thank you for your time.